ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओ सेवेंथ कैंटो चैप्टर सेवन टेक्स्ट नंबर 21 स्वर्णं वर्णं यथा ग्रावसु हेमकारः क्षेत्रे सुयोगैस्तदभिज्ञ आप्नुया क्षेत्रेषु देहेषु तथात्मयोगै अध्यात्मविद्ब्रह्मगतिं लभेत। Translation purported by Stevan Grishal Prabhupada. An expert geologist can understand where there is gold and by various processes can extract it from the gold ore. Similarly, a spiritually advanced person can understand how the spiritual particles exist within the body, and thus by cultivating spiritual knowledge, he can attain perfection in spiritual life. However, as one who is not expert cannot understand where there is gold, a foolish person who has not cultivated spiritual knowledge cannot understand how the spirit exists within the body. Purport. Here is a very good example concerning spiritual understanding. Foolish rascals, including so-called gyanis, philosophers and scientists, cannot understand the existence of the soul within the body because they are lacking in spiritual knowledge. The Vedas enjoin tad vijnanartham sa gurum eva vigachet. To understand spiritual knowledge, one must approach a bona fide spiritual master. Unless one has been trained in geology, one cannot detect gold in stone. Similarly, unless one has been trained by a spiritual master, he cannot understand what is spirit and what is matter. Here it is said, yogestad abhigyaha. This indicates that one who has connected himself with spiritual knowledge can understand that there is a spiritual soul within the body. However, one who is an animalistic conception of life and has no spiritual culture cannot understand. As an expert mineralogist or geologist can understand where there is gold and can then invest his money to dig there and chemically separate the gold from the ore, an expert spiritualist can understand where the soul is within matter. One who has not been trained cannot distinguish between gold and stone. Similarly, fools and rascals who have not learned from an expert spiritual master what is soul and what is matter cannot understand the existence of soul within the body. To understand such knowledge, one must be trained in the mystic yoga system or finally in the bhakti yoga system. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 18.55, bhakti amam abhijanati. Unless one takes shelter of bhakti yoga process, one cannot understand the existence of the soul within the body. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita begins by teaching, Dehino smitha dehe kamaram yavanam jara tatha dehantara praptir dhirastatranam huyati. As an embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. Bhagavad Gita 2.13. Thus, the first instruction is that one should understand that the soul is within the body and is transmigrating from one body to another. This is the beginning of spiritual knowledge. Any person who is not expert in understanding this science or is unwilling to understand, it remains in bodily conception of life or the animalistic conception of life. As confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, Yasatma Buddhi Kund Petra Dhatuke Sa Eva Gokharaha. Every member of human society should clearly understand the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. For only in this way can one be spiritually elevated and automatically give up the false illusory knowledge by which one thinks, I am this body and everything belonging to this body is mine, aham ameti. This dogish conception should be rejected immediately. One should be prepared to understand the spirit soul and the supreme spirit, God, who are eternally related. Thus, one may return home back to Godhead, having solved all the problems of life. Once again, an expert geologist can understand where there is gold and by various processes can extract it from the gold ore. Similarly, a spiritual advanced person can understand how the spiritual particle exists within the body, and thus by cultivating spiritual knowledge, he can attain perfection in spiritual life. However, as one who is not expert cannot understand that there is gold, a foolish person who has not cultivated spiritual knowledge cannot understand how the spirit exists within the body. Hare Krishna. So here in this purport and in translation, basically the distinction between an expert person and a fool person, difference is given. Expert person who can see things as they are, as Prabhupada used to say, and fool who cannot see. Basically, because he is sleeping to that knowledge, therefore he cannot see. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Yanisha Sarvabhudhanam Tasyam Jagrita Sayami, that what is night for a common living entity is a day for self-realized soul. And what is a day for a common living entity is a night for self-realized soul. And the typical example of this kind of thing or is a owl, because everyone sees in daytime, and for an owl that is night. And what is night, what is a day for owl is night for everyone. How much you try to convince an owl that this is day, you cannot convince him. So therefore, like in common language also, if we have to address someone as fool, generally we say that he is, in Hindi we say, is Ullu. Because for him, day is night and night is day. So, if you see, everyone in this material world, whoever takes birth, is born like an owl or Ullu. Therefore, we say, O Magganti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Guru Venama. And Prabhupada here in the purport writes about training, that how, because we are born in ignorance, so spiritual master by knowledge he opens our eyes and trains us to see things as they are. Otherwise we remain owl or we remain fool. And here Prahlad Maharaj also, he is also giving very basic knowledge to his classmates, whatever he has learned from Narad Muni. And in purport also, Prabhupada is talking about very basic knowledge of body and soul. And if we read Prabhupada's books, and if we hear Prabhupada's lectures, conversations, we'll find Prabhupada, most of the time Prabhupada speaks about body and soul. Because Prabhupada is following Mahajan as Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj is not speaking very esoteric things to his classmates, because he knew that they won't be able to understand it. Sometimes people criticize Prabhupada that Prabhupada has given very basic things. He has not given us very high esoteric things. But it is not that Prabhupada didn't know about all those things, but because we are not qualified, we are still stuck up in bodily concept of life. Therefore, Prabhupada has given maximum lectures on this verse, which Prabhupada quotes in this, Dehino Asminitha Dehe, speaking about the difference between body and soul, because he knew that this is most important fundamental knowledge which we need. But it is not that Prabhupada has not given us high things also. It is there. But if in immature state, if we try to achieve those things artificially, we'll get indigestion. We won't be able to digest those things. But still Prabhupada has given, you know, just to create an impetus that if we follow these basic rules and regulations very sincerely, ultimately this is what we are going to achieve. Just like I remember many years before, we were learning Mridanga from Daita Krishna Prabhu, who was our cook here many years before. So of course, when he was teaching us the basic beats, Tete Kheta, in between he used to, you know, just display the esoteric hi-fi beats also, just to give an impetus to us, you know, that if you follow these basic beats, then ultimately, slowly, you will reach to this platform also one day. But ultimately, he would come back to Tete Kheta only. So it is not that from the very beginning, someone can learn high-fi things. So basic knowledge is very, very important in Krishna consciousness. We have to make our foundation very strong. And how to understand that whether my foundation is strong or not, that is important to understand. Because sometimes after performing Krishna consciousness for a while, you know, the tendency is we think, okay, now, you know, I have crossed over this bodily concept of life a little bit. But our actions and our thoughts, they reveals to us that whether we are still in bodily concept of life or not. So, so our actions distinguish that whether this person is a bodily concept or not. Just like, I'll take two stories from Srimad Bhagavatam, that how in those incidents, once someone was in bodily concept of life, acting according to bodily concept, and someone acting according to spiritual concept. So first is from 6th canto, where Maharaj Rahugana, who was traveling from his province to some holy place. And he was traveling by a palanquin, and four people were carrying him. And suddenly in between they realized that for them, carrying Maharaj Rahugana alone was quite difficult. So they thought to add another person, and they went for search, and they found this Jad Bharat, who was living like a living but kind of dead person, dull stone. So they thought, oh, this person is very stout and very fat and very strong, so he can do this job very nicely. So they just took him and they employed him to carry the palanquin. And after some time, they found that this person was not acting properly. Because when Jad Bharat would see that some ants are crawling on the ground, just to save them, he would jump. And because of this, the palanquin was shaking. And Rahugan, in the beginning, he must have thought, you know, okay, just for a while it is happening, for a moment or minute. But when it happened again and again and again, then he came out of his palanquin and started shouting. And first he, sarcastically, he taunted Jad Bharat, trying to agitate him. He said, oh, you are alone, you are carrying this palanquin, and you are so thin and you are so frail, for so long you are carrying this palanquin. So he tried to agitate him. So he was on bodily concept of life. Of course, he was a great king, and as it will be revealed afterwards, that when he came to know that Jad Bharat is not an ordinary soul, he immediately surrendered to him. So he had that knowledge, but just because he was having that position of a king, he came under the influence of mode of passion and mode of goodness, mode of ignorance. So he started chastising him. And then he said, you are like a dead man, so can't you carry this palanquin properly? You don't know who I am. I am the master of this province. I can punish you. And what was the reaction of Jad Bharat? He was completely unagitated. Apuryamana machalam pratishtham. Just like an ocean. Completely. Because he was beyond bodily concept of life. He was situated in spiritual consciousness. And to the degree one is in bodily concept of life, to that degree, circumstances and people of this world and things will agitate him. But because he was completely beyond it, nothing could agitate him. Although he was living in a material body, he was completely out of it. He knew very well that I am spirit soul. And that's how he replied to Rahugan Maharaj. He said, whatever you are saying is right actually. I am not thin, I am not fat. Actually, I am not carrying this palanquin. So very calmly, very coolly, he replied to Maharaj Rahugan. Because very, very clearly, he could see the temporariness of this material world, which Maharaj Rahugan was not able to see. Maharaj Rahugan, he was just caught up in some circumstances that he is not acting properly. But he didn't know that this situation is temporary. But Jad Bharat, he not only was seeing that temporary situation, but he had personal realization of past three lives also. Very clearly he could see, you know, this material world is so temporary, you know. Three lives before I was a king, I was son of, you know, Rishabhdev, I had 99 other brothers, and I was ruling the entire kingdom. In one sense, he, you know, he must be thinking, you know, see, this Rahugan king is so nonsense, you know. He is simply a king of a province, and I was king of the entire planet Earth. And what happened to that? Just went away. Nothing. No remains practically. And then what happened? He went to the body of a deer. And then now he's here, Jad Bharat. So he very clearly could see the temporariness of things of this world, people of this world, and situation of this world. And because he was seeing the temporariness, material situation could not agitate him. He was very steady. But because he was Maharaj Rahugan, he could not see the temporariness. He was agitated. So why we are agitated? You know, small, small things, if we see, small, small things agitate us. Because we are not able to see that everything is temporary here. Nasto vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyate sata. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that there is no existence of temporary things and eternal things never lost. So we have to see the temporariness of material world. And Jad Bharat, because he was seeing very clearly everything, you know, so he was not agitated. And Prabhupada writes in that purport about the positive attitude of Jad Bharat. He writes, in all reverse conditions, a devotee agrees to suffer the result of his past life. He never accuses the Lord of putting him in distress condition. Tatyenu kampam susumikshamanam. He is never angry with his master. He is always satisfied with the position his master offers. In any case, he continues performing his duty in devotion service. So, I remember last December during the Vyas Puja of His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, they have put some cutouts, Maharaj's instructions on the pandal. So one of the instructions was, which some other I came across and which I found very, very relevant, is Maharaj said that we should not take this material world very seriously because it is always changing. Anything, and then he says, anything which is very agitating and we take it very seriously today is going to change tomorrow. So in our day-to-day life also, when we're dealing with devotees, when we're dealing with different circumstances, we should try to see the temporariness, that how everything is changing, instead of just being caught up in some circumstances and then regret throughout our lives practically sometimes. We should be careful. So here, Jad Bharat, he was, as translation explains, Jad Bharat was an expert geologist. He could see that there is a soul below all these material coverings in Rahuguna's heart. And by his behavior, by his words, he extracted that soul out. So this was the expertise of Jad Bharat. And it is not that sometimes we may think, you know, that, oh, Jad Bharat was on that level, so he was pure devotee, what can I do? No, it is not that for him there was no struggle. Even for a pure devotee, struggle is there. But because he is very tuned with Krishna, he is always serving Krishna's instruction, is Krishna consciousness. So for him, to choose the positive alternatives becomes easy. Struggle is always there. Because Rahugana was in very deep in bodily consciousness. So for him to choose to act according to his higher nature was very, very difficult. But because Jad Bharat was Krishna conscious, so for him it was very, very easy to choose that option. Okay, I'll not act according to my lower nature. I'll act according to my higher nature. But struggle is always there. So, so we also have practically every moment we have choice. Okay, what we opt for, what we choose, to act according to our higher nature or act according to our lower nature. So here we see a first example where King Rahugana, he was in bodily consciousness of life. And of course, he was not ordinary soul. He was great Rajarishi. And when he came to know that Jadabharat is not ordinary soul, immediately surrendered to him and received instructions from him. So if we are identifying ourselves with the body, then it is not unnatural to act to satisfy this body. It is natural, because if you are thinking, I'm this body, I'll act to satisfy this body. If I'm convinced, if I've realized that I'm the soul, then I'll act to satisfy the soul. And that is pleasure of Krishna. So, but if we are in bodily concept of life, if we think that, okay, I'm this body, then duality comes. That, oh, this person will help me in my sense gratification. This person will not help me in my sense gratification to satisfy my body. The duality comes. But when we are situated in Krishna consciousness, when we understand that I am the soul and I am part and parcel of Krishna, then we see everything as Krishna, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. And then there is no duality, because everything is Krishna. There is nothing which is apart from Krishna. So, bodily concept of life leads to duality and partiality. And this partial behavior is very clearly seen in the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj with Suruchi. So, we know this pastime, how one day when Dhruva Maharaj, he was also like 5 years old child, like Prahlad Maharaj. And while reading this pastime, we can just, you know, remember or just keep in our subconscious mind that these pastimes are the favorite pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because even Prahlad Maharaj also, because it's natural when a 5 years old boy do something which is not expected from him, it automatically attracts attention of other. So in both pastimes, 5 year old boys, Prahlad Maharaj and Dhruva Maharaj, they exhibited extraordinary devotion and determination. So Dhruva Maharaj, 5 year old boy, he was trying to sit in the lap of his mother, father Uttanapad. And his stepbrother Uttam was already sitting there. And when he was trying to do that, suddenly his stepmother Suruchi came. And she became very angry upon him and started chastising him. And Srimad Bhagavatam explains. She said, "My dear child, you do not deserve to sit on the throne or on the lap of the king. Surely you are also the son of king. But because you did not take your birth from my womb, you are not qualified to sit on your father's lap." So this is bodily concept of life, that, okay, you haven't taken birth from my womb, therefore you are not allowed. And in one sense, she was trying to present herself that I love the king so much, I love Uttanapad so much. But little did she knew that actually she didn't love Uttanapad at all. She was attached to the opulence which he was providing. And Uttanapad was also in this misunderstanding that, see, my wife Suruchi loves me so much. But he was also not, he also didn't love her so much. He was, there is no love in this material world, exploitation. So both of them, they were trying to present themselves that I love you so much, I love you so much. But there was exploitation. And in fact, this Uttam also, he could have thought, see, my mother loves so much that she is not allowing other person, my stepbrother, to sit in my father's lap. But he also didn't know that Suruchi is giving him so much love because he has taken birth from her womb. If instead of him, if Dhruva would have taken birth from Suruchi's womb, she would love him more than Uttam. So he didn't know about this. So this is bodily concept of life, that you have not taken birth from my womb. And not only this, then she says that now you have to die again. he tells Dhruva, you die now, and then next life you take birth from my womb, and then you will you'll be able to sit on the throne of your father or in the lap. And so this was envy actually, and in one sense it is not that Suruchi was envious of Dhruva. Suruchi was not envious of Dhruva in one sense. Just like Suruchi didn't love Uttam actually. Suruchi was loving someone who came out of her womb. That's all. So similarly, Suruchi was not envious of Dhruva. She was envious of, in one sense, ultimately Supreme Personality of Godhead, but in that particular scenario, she was envious of Suniti. And automatically she became envious of anything and everything which is connected to Suniti. And here her envy comes out. That, okay, you have taken birth from that womb. No, then you are not qualified. You have to take birth from my womb. So if you see, it was not a big thing, you know, such a small thing. If she would have allowed Dhruva to sit on the lap of Uttanapada Maharaj, what was the harm? You know, a small child is trying to sit on the father's lap. There was, but very small thing, and she made a big issue out of it. Isn't it? It's a small thing. And she was also caught up in circumstances, temporariness. She could not realize that this is temporary, you know. Few years before, I was not there, and after a few years, I won't be there. I was reading this Bhagavatam, this section, in fifth canto, where, you know, Uttanapada was ruling, and then Dhruva ruled for thousands of years. Then Dhruva's descendant ruled for thousands of years. Then Prachetas came, and so millions of years passed. And then there was no one to take care of the kingdom because there was no descendant after that. So then Priyavrat Maharaj was called, and then he ruled for 11 million years, you know, and then Agnidhar came. So, you know, time is so vast, you know. There is no beginning of time, there is no end of time, if you see. But if someone is there in some circumstances, some position for 2 years, for 5 years, for 10 years, for 20 years, we start thinking, you know, this is so important for me. So Suruchi couldn't see that after some time everything is going to become simply history. So instead of just, you know, just focusing in those things and just getting caught up in those things, it is worthless. So she was in bodily concept of life. And because she was in bodily concept of life, and Uttanapada Maharaj also didn't say anything, automatically Dhruva was also got up. He also developed this bodily concept of life, a kind of revengeful attitude that I have to take revenge. I have to get a kingdom which is even higher than the kingdom of Brahma. He also couldn't understand that everything is temporary. And in that pitiful state, he runs towards his mother. When Dhruva Maharaj reached his mother, his lips were trembling in anger, and he was crying very grievously. Queen Suniti immediately lifted her son onto her lap, while the palace residents, who had heard all the harsh words of Suruchi, related everything in detail. Thus Suruchi also became greatly aggrieved. So till today, Suruchi was tolerating everything because she was not treated well by her husband. But today, like today was something different because her son was mistreated and she could not tolerate this. If someone mistreats you, it becomes easy to tolerate. But if someone mistreats someone whom you love very much, it becomes difficult. So for her, today's situation was quite difficult to tolerate. So, like, it was natural for her just to criticize, you know, her co-wife, Suruchi. It would be unobjectionable if she would have done criticism towards Suruchi. Oh, generally this happens, you know, in this material world. If someone mistreats you, it is common. Automatically we start criticizing or blaming. And in fact, she would have criticized even her husband also, that, you know, he's like this, he never takes care of me, he's very much attached to his another wife. But she could also see the temporariness of this material world. that everything is so temporary here. And because she was able to see the temporariness of things of this world, persons of this world, and situations of this world, instead of choosing to her lower nature of, you know, criticizing and blaming, she thought, no. She acted very wisely. She understood that if I take any wrong decision right now, that is going to affect Dhruva very much. Suppose if she would have criticized Suruchi and Uttanapath and blamed and all nonsense things, so this would simply increase the revenge of Dhruva, and his consciousness would fall down. But immediately she calmed herself, and then she tried to protect the consciousness of Dhruva. So in 3-4 verses, very beautifully she elevates, or she gives a positive perspective to the whole situation. Recently, actually, I wrote an article in BTG, so therefore, on Suniti, so therefore, I thought just to share with all of you. So, she said, she also was breathing very heavily, and she did not know the factual remedy for the painful situation. Not finding any remedy, she said to her son, "My dear son, don't wish for anything inauspicious for others. Anyone who inflicts pains upon others suffers himself from that pain." So first of all, she said, because she knew now Dhruva is a Kshatriya, and his mind must be really agitated, full of revenge. So just to put full stop there only, she said, don't think ill about your stepmother. Because if you think ill about her, then ultimately that is going to come back upon you. And because she has misbehaved with you, automatically she'll get her karma. So there is no need for you to take revenge or think ill about it. Don't worry. So first of all, she gave the principle of karma, that don't think ill about her. And then she says, very amazingly, she said that tolerate. And she said, because it is not in your destiny. She said, it is not the fault of Suruchi. It is your fault, Dhruva. Because you are expecting beyond your destiny. She says, whatever has spoken by Suruchi is so. Because the king, your father, does not consider me his wife or even his maidservant, he feels ashamed to accept me. Therefore, it is a fact that you have taken birth from the womb, an unfortunate woman, and by being fed from her breast, you have grown up. So she said, it is not in your destiny, Dhruva. Why are you trying to, why don't try to understand this? If it is not your destiny, just accept it as it is. So it is not her fault, it is your fault. So in this way, she tried to calm him down. And then she gave a completely different perspective, which even Dhruva Maharaj also never expected that she will say like this. She said, my dear boy, whatever has been spoken by Suruchi, your stepmother, although very harsh to hear, is factual. Therefore, if you desire at all to sit on the same throne as your stepbrother, Uttama, then give up your envious attitude and immediately try to execute the instructions of your stepmother. Because her stepmother, Suruchi, had said that if you want to sit on the lap of your father or throne, then you should go and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then gather pious credit, and with that pious credit, take birth from my womb, and then you'll be qualified to sit on the throne. Without further delay, you must engage yourself in the worship of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So she said that Suruchi is not your, don't be envious of her. She's your well-wisher. It's not an easy thing. Someone is, you know, mistreating you, and to think that, oh, he is my well-wisher. And Prabhupada writes in the purport, indirectly the words of Suruchi were a benediction for Dhruva Maharaj, for because of the influence of his stepmother's words, he became a great devotee. So, of course, Suruchi spoke and Dhruva heard, but Suniti was the person who turned the whole event. He was the person who turned the whole event. So here she is saying that don't be envious of her. And in fact, you should be grateful to Suruchi that indirectly she has given you this direction. So in this way, we know, of course, pastime is quite long and we don't have much time. So Dhruva was having wrong motives in the beginning when he was insulted by his stepmother, like because he wanted to attain kingdom which is even beyond Brahmaji's. And he didn't even know the direction, how to achieve that. So both things were wrong. Motives were wrong and direction were wrong. He might have done something, taken some wrong step to achieve that. Might have gone to some, tantra, mantra or something, some revolution he must have created. Something, because the kshatriya, he cannot stop a kshatriya. But Suniti gave direction. No, you must worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She gave the direction, but she didn't change his motives. She didn't say, okay, no, you should give up this revengeful attitude. You won't be able to sit there. You just be satisfied. Because first of all, maybe there could be many reasons, but she knew that he's a kshatriya. So for a kshatriya to pacify, like even Narad Muni could not, afterwards we see, Narad Muni could not change his mind. And of course, she also had faith in Supreme Personality of Godhead, that if Dhruva goes to forest and takes shelter of Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, then Krishna will protect him. So therefore, very happily, she directed Dhruva to worship Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. But when he meets Narad Muni, then Narad Muni gave, the final instructions and direction. Okay, you want to worship Supreme Personality of Godhead? And he gave the mantra. He told him how to worship the deity. And he gave the process which ultimately changed the motives also. Sunuti gave the direction. And Narad Muni gave, final direction, how to do exactly. And he also gave the process to change the motives of Dhruva Maharaj. Although in the beginning, he was not able to hear, not ready to listen anything. But because Narad Muni, he was also a perfect geologist. He could see that there is a gold in the heart. Someone was telling last week in our Brahmacharya class, I don't remember who. I think Shyamanand Prabhu, that in 1,000 kg of gold ore, only 3 grams of gold comes. 999 kg and 997 grams is waste material. So only 3 grams is gold. So Narad Muni could see that, the determination is there. And this person wants to worship Supreme Personality of Godhead. Akama sarva kama moksha kama udarathi. So he directed, and ultimately his motives also changed. And when Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna appeared, Lord Narayan appeared in front of him, he said, I don't want anything. I came for the broken pieces of glass. And now I got the priceless gem of your darshan. So because of Guru, as Prabhupada mentions in the purport, that training is given how to see, how to change our perspective from bodily consciousness to spiritual consciousness. And ultimately, because he worshipped Krishna with determination, with faith in Guru's word, not only he came out of his bodily concept of life, when he came back to his kingdom, his father was also, and his stepmother, who was in the beginning very much envious of him, her heart also changed. And while going back home, back to Godhead, he took his mother also, Sunidhi. So in this way, we see that how our actions shows that whether we are in bodily concept of life or in spiritual concept of life. And choice is always there. Krishna always gives choice. Free will is always there, whether to choose this way or to choose that way. But if we are sincere, if we are following the process very sincerely, then to choose acting according to Krishna conscious way becomes easy. And if we are too much into bodily concept, if we are too much towards sense gratification, then it becomes very, very difficult to take to proper choice. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Anyone has any comment or question? Yes, Prahlad Bhakta Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhuji, for nice class. Prabhuji, you told that even Ms. Sunidhi told Dhruva Maharaj that you should not blame Suruchi or Uttanapad for such chastisement or whatever. So similarly, in our Vaishnava association, sometimes, you know, someone may speak some harsh words or some criticizing words out of good. It is not their motive is bad, but someone may feel very hurt even though their motive is good. So how to not blame or keep some bad in mind about that person and just accept it as mercy of Krishna? It is inconceivable. Please explain.
I don't know exactly, but we have to, if theoretical understanding is there, or this person is actually saying for my benefit, at least we should understand that first. Because there is one thing is heart and one thing is mind. You know, with intelligence, at least we should understand within our heart, this is my well-wisher. Sometimes mind doesn't accept. You know, mind starts, you know, revolting. Oh no, still, you know, how we can say like this? But at least within our heart, we should understand that this is my well-wisher. This person loves me and for my benefit is saying like this. And we should try to see ourselves different from mind. And I'm not actually mind, you know. My mind is saying all these nonsense things. But actually, this is my well-wisher. And at least we should not criticize him or blame him. Our mind may so, say so many things, but at least we should theoretically understand and thank him. We should be grateful to that person for teaching us some lessons. I remember many years before, one article came in BTG, written by one of proper disciple, Karanamrit Prabhu. So he, the title was Thanks for being such a pain. The title was Thanks for being such a pain. And he writes that we should offer thanks to those who give pain to us because they teach us tolerance. Of course, very high level, very easy to speak, but when come on practical level. But at least ideal should be there in our mind, or this is ideal. And slowly, slowly, we should try to achieve that. But it is difficult. Someone was telling me that 11th canto, I think Krishna says to Uddhava, that that, I think who yesterday, maybe Gauravan Prabhu was telling that, or someone, that sage is very rare, that person is very rare, if he's criticized, doesn't feel hurt. Very, very rare. In fact, Jadabharat also, we are talking about that he is Param Vaishnava, it is said that he also felt hurt. But that feeling of hurt was not on bodily concept. Even Varadev felt hurt. Bhagavatam explains that Hiranyaksha was, you know, blaspheming Lord Vara. He also felt hurt in his heart. But that feeling of hurt was not on bodily concept. That was on spiritual level. But it is not that, because we are human being, definitely we'll feel hurt because we have emotions. We are not dull stone. But at least in our heart of hearts, we should understand that everyone is my well-wisher. Everyone loves me. I don't know if someone wants to add anything. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada ki, Granth Raj Bhagavatam ki chai.